From the studios of Books in Motion in Spokane, Washington, this is Kevin Foley reading Keohok Reborn, Book 2, In the Days of Winter Wolf. Now let's begin with In the Days of Winter Wolf. Chapter 1, Nevada Territory, 1875. Chief Winter Wolf lay on his stomach against the rocky ridge of Four Feathers Hill. He remained motionless, allowing his brown, dust-covered skin and dark hair to blend in with the desert terrain. Mad Fox, a warrior of 24 summers, two less than Winter Wolf, lay beside him. Both had assumed this post many times in the past, as had generations of Keohok warriors before them. They watched intently as a platoon of bluecoats made their way across the desert between the hill and Red Rock Mountain, toward Big Water to the south. Winter Wolf counted 250 mounted warriors, and perhaps another 30 or so seated on the buckboards of a dozen supply wagons. There were several covered wagons, too. Mad Fox prided himself in his knowledge of the animal life that flourished in the desert and in the forest of Red Rock Mountain. He recognized the footprint and the call of every beast that crawled across the ground and flew in the air. But he'd never seen white men before. The wagons creaked and groaned under the weight of the supplies that had been piled into them. The men obviously didn't know or care that they were passing through Keohok territory, and combined with the amount of cargo they were bringing with them, it appeared to Mad Fox that they intended to stay for quite a while. Mad Fox started to speak, but Winter Wolf, whose gaze remained forward and fixed, placed a hand over his mouth. Private Farron's neck had become stiff from constantly glancing around. He had drawn the short straw and was forced to ride tail end of the wagon train. He knew they were traveling through Indian country, which tribe wasn't important to him. What he feared was that, as the last in line, he'd be the first attacked. He scanned the desert from side to side, and then twisted his entire body to get a better look behind his wagon. When he turned forward again, he yanked sharply on the reins. "Whoa!" he called. While he'd been busy worrying about what could be happening behind his back, the driver of the wagon in front of him had raised his hand, signaling stop. He waited as Sergeant Brom Page trotted his horse down the platoon lines, announcing that they were going to set camp for the night. Private Farron breathed a sigh of relief as he slowly guided his team into the circle formed by the other wagons. Once settled, he lifted the wooden brake lever and jumped down from the buckboard. He arched his aching back and slapped the dust from the front of his shirt. He'd made it through another day, and for that he was grateful. General Frank Adkins dismounted, grabbed the canteen that was strapped to his saddle, then handed the reins of his horse to Private Polson, who took it away to be fed and watered. It felt good to be on his own 2 feet again, so Adkins walked 100 paces from the others. He marveled at the vastness of the open desert and at the multitude of colors the setting sun painted across it. This was unlike any landscape he'd ever known. He'd spent most of his life in the woods and fields of Virginia. When the Civil War had broken out, he moved his troops through the Carolinas and down into Georgia. He'd spent a great deal of time in thick forests and deep swamps, and had never seen a desert, nor could he have imagined one so desolate underfoot and yet so vibrant overhead. He pushed his hat off his forehead and used the sleeve of his coat to mop the sweat that had collected under the brim. The material felt like sandpaper against his sunburned skin. He lifted the patch that covered his missing left eye and rubbed the empty
Sample complete. Ready to continue?